Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
When you're down and troubled.
We're back. It's 12 after.
And you need a helping.
I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Steve Malanga is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Steve's a new friend. He's a contributing editor of the City Journal and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He writes about a lot of different issues, including business, and he's an award-winning journalist in the things that he does, and he's a new friend of ours. Steve, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. Steve, recently you wrote a piece on minimum wage that was published in the New York Post, and I'd like for you to talk to us a little bit about that. My audience of small business owners know all about minimum wage and the minimum wage increases that we've had and how it affects them, and I'd like for you to talk to us a little bit about some of the research that you're aware of.
Well, yeah, let me tell you a little bit about the piece, because it actually originated because they were debating passing minimum wage increase in New York State, and this is something that's being debated not only in states around the country, but also nationally with the presidential campaign.
The reason that's a good point, folks, is because, Steve, I think a lot of people don't realize that in addition to the national minimum wage, some states have their own minimum wage.
Exactly. And we also have, we could talk about this if we have some time, many cities are now also enacting what's known as so-called living wage legislation. So there's a lot of local efforts because advocates of minimum wage increases have been unable to get a national legislation. They have been focusing locally and statewide, and they've been somewhat successful at this. So it is a very important point, actually. It's a little bit sometimes below the radar screen, if
right.
you will, but it's going on out there.
Steve, what's the difference between living wage? What distinction do they make between living wage and minimum wage?
Well, a lot of advocates of the living wage movement is especially being driven by unions and also especially public employee unions. Living wage is this idea that you take an area of the country, let's just say the greater New York area, you determine what the cost of living is there, and you set a wage that is determined by how much the union advocates decide it would cost to live in this area. So the living wage for New York City might be $12 an hour. And then you try to pass some kind of legislation which forces businesses to pay the living wage, which is obviously way above the minimum
wage.
And what's happened is that many cities in particular have passed living wage legislation that forces anyone doing business with the city itself or any government entity to pay a living wage. They've been mostly unable to get citywide living wage laws passed because those have been overturned on constitutional grounds.
So you're talking about on a local level something that's tantamount to the Davis-Bacon law for doing business with the federal
prevailing wage. Well, that's interesting. There's somewhat of an analogy there. The thing is that if you look at some of the research that's been done by union think tanks and so forth, they always make this determination of how much it takes to live in a certain area, and that research usually comes out with a number that's fairly high. Like in San Francisco, the number is like maybe $33,000 a year. So mm-hmm. they want to set minimum wage based on a wage that would attain in some way or another $33,000 a year.
Right.
There are people who would say, you know, for a single person, you know, that's a big number for a business to be required to pay, especially because, and here's the key point, especially because the vast majority of people who are earning money at the lower end of the wage scale are not the primary earners in their family.
Mm-hmm.
They are teenagers with part-time jobs. They are spouses who are second earners or third earners. And so as soon as you try to enforce legislation which says everyone has to earn $12 or $13 an hour, what you're really doing is you're giving a big wage increase to teens, to second and third earners, sometimes in families where the average family income is much, much way above the poverty level already. So it's something where you're imposing a big cost on business, but you're not necessarily helping people who are destitute.
Right. Well, the minimum wage on a national level, raising, what is it now, 5 1/4?
Yeah, 15. Right.
515. And of course, as we know, Senator Ted Kennedy is the poster child for raising minimum wage. He's been working on this. He's the lead guy on that project. But he has not had any luck in getting it passed. He talks about it all the time. And so what you're saying is that some of the local, state and local folks have been advocates of minimum wage increases, have been basically fighting their own war on a local basis.
And doing it somewhat successfully.
Give us some examples of where they've accomplished this.
Well, first of all, New York State just did it. So that's an awfully large state.
Did they pass a minimum wage or a living wage?
Well, they raised the minimum wage. Statewide, but there are also many municipalities in New York, including New York City, which have some form of living wage legislation. New York City has living wage legislation that applies to certain kinds of contractors. They also have it for certain kinds of healthcare workers paid under Medicaid. So, I mean, I would estimate in New York City somewhere between 50,000 and 100,000 workers are now covered by New York City's living wage law. Now, that's in addition to the minimum wage increase that the state just imposed.
But the living wage only applies if they're doing business with the state?
Or the city in this case.
Right.
Yes,
okay.
But you have to understand something. A lot of businesses these days, you know, do business
of course.
With the city and state. And when you stop to think, actually, about the impact, particularly of a very large municipality like New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, they do an enormous amount of procurement. They do enormous amount of contracting to, let's say, nonprofits. In Michigan, for instance, the Salvation Army pulled out of a number of different programs that it had with the city of Detroit after Detroit passed living wage legislation because the Salvation Army said, we can no longer run these. They were homeless services. We can't afford to run these services at this price. We have a lot of volunteers. We have a lot of, you know, teens and second and third earners working
right.
for us. So there's a huge contracting network out there that cities tap into, and so you affect a lot of businesses and a lot of nonprofits when you pass this legislation. And that's
Hold on to that thought, Steve. I got to take a quick break. When we come back, folks, we're going to Steve to talk to us about what happens to those employees who were at the rate that the wages just been raised to. 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our new friend Steve Malanga, who's contributing editor of City Journal and senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Steve, you want to give us a website, please?
It's www.manhattan-institute.org, and it's also city-journal.org.
All right. Is your book Tortured State still available? Is that something that's still out there?
That was a series that I did. You can probably find it on the internet on a database service like Nexus or something like
okay.
that. That was specifically about trial lawyers.
Right.
But
okay.
you know, at the Manhattan Institute, we have something else that we recently put out called Trial Lawyers Inc., which I participated in, which you can find on our website, and it is a look at the industry of the lawsuit industry and the impact that it has on business. And I think that's probably the most current thing that we've done, and I think it's probably would be of great interest to a lot of business people.
Right, Steve. Let's get back to the minimum wage and the living wage issue. One of my many complaints and conflicts with raising minimum wage by government fiat is this, and that is the morale issue. I mean, we'll talk about the economics in a minute, but there's also a morale issue. You mentioned a minute ago that you threw out $33,000 as the living wage. I don't know if that's actually a number that anybody's using these days, but let's just say that it is. And we've got somebody that the day before that wage, that living wage was passed and raised to $33,000. We had a guy out there in our business who had earned $33,000 over a period of 3 to 5 years or so. He'd worked hard. He'd been productive for the company. He took some responsibility and some initiative and worked really hard. And he was so proud of himself because he had earned $33,000. And the next day, a guy comes in who doesn't even know where the bathroom is, let alone how to be productive for the company, and he's making $33,000. How do we reconcile those two guys?
Well, of course, what happens is that the person who's been making $33,000 or whatever, he now expects a raise, and now he probably has a good reason for expecting one.
Exactly.
Because he thinks, you know, with all of his experience, he believes, you know, I obviously can't be paid the same as some guy who walks in off the street. So there's sort of a double hit there. You either give him the raise, in which case you've actually raised your cost twice. Not only are you paying your entry-level workers more, you know, you also now have to raise everybody else along the scale.
And so see, that kind of, if we did that nationally, do you have any idea what that would do to inflation?
Well, you know, here's the thing. There's one way that it might not impact inflation. The way it might not impact inflation is given if you're a business and you've got a product line and you can't raise your prices, then you have to cut your costs.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is people don't hire or they trim their workforce when their labor costs go up.
And or they stop investing in capital items.
Exactly. In order to keep inflation, in order to keep price increases in check, small businesses and businesses in general that wind up spending less, and this is what minimum wage research has found, that when you raise the minimum wage, what you do is you depress employment.
Right.
Because, you know, the government can't increase a business's revenues by legislation.
None of this produces 1 pound of productivity, does it?
Exactly. So what happens is, those people who were earning the minimum wage, you decrease the number of jobs available to those people. And particularly what you do is you increase unemployment among workers in the age category of 16 to 24. These are entry-level workers coming into the workforce. You decrease employment among African-American teens. This is what research has shown, and this is the danger of something like this.
And
now,
the problem
is the people... I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, Steve, the thing about it is that 20 years ago, employers had no choice but to keep the employees and just deal with it because they didn't have any alternatives. In today's world, the 21st century, with the technology that's available, we have other alternatives than hiring new people. We can buy new technology.
Well, exactly. I mean, it is all about productivity. And if you look at, if you look at inflation, I mean, we live in an era where if inflation gets above 3%, it's considered startling.
Right.
So as a result of that, businesses just don't have the room for price increases. Everybody knows this. It's just
right. And we don't have a lot. We don't have extra profits laying around. It's not like we're hoarding profits that we're not giving to our employees, especially small businesses. Let me ask you a question, Steve. What can small business owners do to prevent this, either the local regional minimum wage or living wage or the national increase in minimum wage? What can we do to prevent this?
Well, I mean, among other things, there's always strength in numbers, and I look at some municipalities, and New York City is a good place, and I have to say the small business community is not well organized here, and I understand why it's not. You know, small business people have enough problems.
That's right.
Just, running their business, but there's really strength in numbers, and there are some decent small business organizations, and I know some of them struggle to get businesses involved, particularly, as I said, in places, big places like Los Angeles and New York City. And I always say, there's strength in numbers. That's the only way, you're going to win.
Right. Get organized and get behind the organizations that have some voice, and there
right.
are some of them out there. Steve Malanga, we're going to have to wrap it up. Thank you for being here today. Good job.
Well, my pleasure.
We hope you'll come back again another day.
All right, sure.
Thanks. Steve Malanga, ladies and gentlemen, he's with the Manhattan Institute. That's manhattan-institute.com.org, I think it is, .org. Quick break. I'll be right back with Rich Galen. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Charity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.